So good morning, everybody. I hope you're all feeling well this morning and ready for another day of practice. So we're entering into this practice of Vipassana. Vipassana. I think you're all familiar with this word, which is translated as insight. So this is an insight practice. So what that means is that we, through our awareness, we look deeply into the way things really are. Because generally, we are not seeing things as they really are, but we see things more through the filters of our mind, the way that our thinking mind or our concepts, the conceptual mind, tells us the way things are. And so in this practice, we are cultivating this awareness, moment-to-moment awareness, so that we can discover, we can investigate the nature of this reality. Otherwise, we just take things the way that we perceive, the way that we imagine, the way that we think. And we think that is the way things are. But in this meditation, we are using another faculty. We're not relying on our intellectual faculty, our intellectual understanding. That has been learned. All of that has been learned through everything that has gone before, all our education and our learning from our parents and our families and our schools. And we had to learn a language, learn how to make meaning out of our experience through language and through speaking. And sometimes without a deeper connection, we call it sometimes a spiritual connection, a connection to the spirit or to that which is not language, that is not the way that we're fabricating our meaning and taking that meaning to be the way things are, and not questioning that. Without questioning that, then we get in a very narrow, very small view, very small world view. We're seeing the world in a very limited way, a very small way. And so we, through the spiritual understanding or the depth, sometimes we call it the wisdom, the depth of wisdom teachings, then we start to open the view. Opening the mind so that we can see more clearly, we can see in a broader way, a bigger way. We see the bigger picture, right? We need to see the bigger picture. Because otherwise we are in a very limited, very, very, very small way that we're living our lives and understanding our human experience. And so all of the ancient religious and spiritual teachings have been pointing to something that is larger, that is bigger. And in order to know this and to start to tap in, we have to use a different instrument. Psyche is a different instrument. Rather than this thinking mind, this intellectual mind, the conceptual mind, we need to be able to move it aside, almost like move it aside, disentangle from that attachment. It's really an attachment. The attachment to our construction, the way we construct the world, make meaning of the world. And it's a natural thing for us as human beings to make meaning. We want to understand. We need to be able to navigate and manage our life experience, our human experience. So we need to make meaning. And it's a very beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing to start to have some sense of purpose, of meaning for all of this very strange and mysterious life that we are part of. And yet we have to hold it all very lightly. We hold it lightly. Right? Don't make it so serious or take it so serious. It's like hold it all lightly because it keeps changing. Right? It keeps changing and opening and shifting, and more and more and more is revealed to us. So as we begin to unhook, it's really unhook, we unhook the mind and that attachment to our mind to dictate the way things are, the way I am, the way you are, the way the world is, the way other people are, the way the situation is. When we hold on to that, we suffer because we're not seeing the whole picture. So we want to understand, and through this practice, we start to say, what's possible? What's really possible for us to start to open the mind? Right? We open the mind, we open the heart, and we start to move out of habit, out of our habits. Because when we're just in our ordinary condition, thinking, way of being, we're just moving in habit. We're like robots, automatic, you know, we're just doing the same thing over and over and over again, right? That's what we do, kind of animal behavior. We're animals. And so we just have routine and habit. We do the same thing again and again and again. But many of those habits, if they're not investigated, if they're not looked into, they can cause us suffering. They cause us pain because we don't know what we're doing that's creating the same pain over and over and over again. Right? And this is really what the Buddha was so interested in, is how can we see into that habit, the tendencies, the habit patterns that we do again and again and again, like falling into a hole. We fall into a hole, we fall into a pit, and we don't know how we got in the pit, how we got in the hole. How did I get here? I'm here again, again and again and again. How do I get here? So that whatever that hole is for you, whatever that pit is for you, whether it's a kind of a maybe a, some depression or anger or fear or pain or unhappiness, you know, how do we get here? And so this is really the investigation of the mind, because we can start to see the patterning. We start to see what we're actually doing, what we're actually paying attention to. And if I keep paying attention to the same things over and over and over again, I'm going to get the same result. I'm going to get the same thing. If I keep giving my attention to something again and again, I'm going to keep getting that same thing. All right? And usually this happens through the thinking, what I'm thinking about. We can have a tendency to maybe, for example, maybe towards complaining, right? Things aren't going the way I want them to go. It always is like this. I want things to be different, but I always get the same thing again. This person keeps acting in the same way and they won't change. And if that person would change, I could be happy, I could feel better. So I just keep in my mind, for example, just trying to get that person to change. And I get angry at them, I get impatient with them, I get frustrated with them, and they won't change, and I am continually unhappy. But maybe that's the wrong way to go. Maybe it's not them that has to change. Maybe something here has to change. Maybe something has to change in my thinking. Something has to change in the way that I'm seeing and viewing. So the practice brings us back. We come back looking at our own mind, looking at our own mind, looking at our own heart. See what we can understand. This is an investigative practice. It's a science in some ways. It's not a religion. I don't even think this is a religion. It's a science. And we're using an instrument of awareness. We're using the instrument of awareness. And we're using the support of our thinking mind that helps us make sense. It helps us understand. We don't throw away the thinking mind, but we use it. We use the thinking mind to help us understand. How do we come out of this pit? How do we come out of the hole where we sink? And we all do this. We all sink. We have a sinkhole. Do you know sinkholes? Just that. Sometimes you see in the news on the computer, on the pictures, where the earth just might be a road or some cement or something, it just cracks. And there's a big hole. Sometimes cars go down, trucks go down. It's just these sinkholes, right, where the earth just collapses. It's the same with us. We just collapse into these sinkholes, right? And it's painful. It's very painful. And so we want to understand how that happens so that maybe we can prevent it, you know, do something differently so that we don't keep sinking into that same hole. It's particularly bad when we know the hole is there and we still go in. We know the hole is there, but something just takes us back. Sometimes maybe we just, if something comfortable in a funny way, something comfortable, something familiar for us. I don't know, it's a funny kind of psychology, or sometimes it's just what we know. It's what we know, and it sometimes for some of us it just feels like home. I'm just comfortable in this misery, right? It's a funny thing. So we want to know, first we want to know that there are other ways. This is not the only way. And the Buddha points us in a different direction. The Buddha says there is freedom from our pain. There's freedom from our pain. There is freedom from suffering. There is the possibility of true happiness. Well, the happiness of the Buddha. What is this happiness of the Buddha? In the Pali, in the old language, it's called Lokottara Sukha. Lokottara Sukha. Sukha means happiness. Sukha. Lokottara means beyond the world. beyond this conditioned world, not the happiness of this world. It's another kind of happiness. It's not a happiness of this mind and the general mind, our mind states and our moods, and it's not the happiness of this body, because this body is never going to be happy. This body is dying. This is dying. It's decaying. It's breaking down all the time. I'm heading for death. This is not going to be happy. There's no happiness in this body, right? And we don't know the time of that death. So there's never any happiness there, right? So it's not the happiness of this body. It's not the happiness of this mind. This mind is always changing, always moving, always shifting, sometimes feeling happy, sometimes feeling miserable. It doesn't stay anywhere in particular. So it's not about the states of mind, it's not about the states of body. We go beyond. Where do we find this happiness or peacefulness or satisfaction? Where do we find that? This is what we want to discover. So we have to understand how we get lost. How do we get lost? How do we forget? How do we lose our way? One of the teachings I wanted to share with you this morning, which I think is helpful for us, is this teaching from the Buddha on the Samyutta Nikaya, one of the texts of the Buddha, where somebody asks the Buddha, what's the difference between an unenlightened disciple, an unenlightened student, and a noble, enlightened one? What's the difference between somebody who's not enlightened and somebody who's enlightened, right? Because both experience pleasant feelings, unpleasant feelings, and neutral feelings. Both one who is not enlightened and one who is enlightened. They both feel the same feelings. Pleasant, unpleasant, and in between, neutral. What's the difference? Isn't that a wonderful question? Right? Everybody understands the question, right? Okay, right? So this is how the Buddha responds. He says, when an unenlightened one meets unpleasant feelings, now we'll talk about the body, particularly in the body, he grieves, laments, wails, beats his chest, and becomes distraught. He can say, oh no, wails. And so the Buddha says he's experiencing two kinds of painful feelings. There's one in the body is feeling a painful feeling, but also in the mind, because he's so upset. So the body is in pain, but also the mind is in pain because of the painful feeling in the body. He says it's as if an archer, after firing one arrow into a certain person, were then to fire a second arrow, that person would experience pain from both arrows. He experiences two kinds of pain, one in the body and one in the mind. Right? So that's the unenlightened person. But when an enlightened, a noble person encounters this unpleasant feeling, she neither grieves, laments, wails, or beats her chest, or becomes distraught. She only experiences one kind of painful feeling, just the feeling in the body, but not the painful feeling in the mind. It's as if an archer, having shot one arrow into a certain person, were to shoot a second arrow but to miss, that person would experience only one kind of pain, the pain in the body, not the pain in the mind. So the Buddha says we should train like this. He says, my body might be affected, but my mind will not be affected. Right? We should train like this. Right? Does everybody understand the difference? The two kinds? Right? Is there everyone following? Because this is, it's really quite a significant. Yeah? I'm not getting any nods. Yeah. Okay.
Can you talk about it a little more?
Right. So how do we experience pain in the mind? That's really the question. It's like, because the body has pain, right? The body is naturally a painful experience because it's always decaying, it's always getting sick because it's moving towards death. Right, so we're always going to experience the pain in the body. It's just part of life. But we don't have to experience the pain in the mind because it's all about how we're thinking about the experience, right? I don't like it, I don't want it, it shouldn't be happening, I don't like this, it's going to ruin my life, it's going to ruin my day, the complaining, the arguing, the being upset with the way things are. That's the pain in the mind, right? That's what we can do something about. We can't do anything about the other experiences. It's just the way it is. Sometimes when we're seeing things, it's welcome, it's pleasant. Sometimes it's not so pleasant, but it's just what we see. We see a dead animal, maybe not so pleasant, right? But what is the mind doing with it? Right? How are we thinking about it? It's like, that shouldn't be happening. It shouldn't happen, right? So it's a way we argue with reality. We argue with the way things are. This is the what he's calling the second arrow. We're shooting another arrow. We can't avoid the first arrow, but we can avoid the second. This is all we can do anything about, right? It's really looking at the way things are. It's looking at nature. Nature is, there's birth and there's death. Right? Things are born and they pass away. This is the nature. When we look at the way things are, when we're looking with awareness, with wisdom, and we look directly without getting so caught up in our own likes and dislikes, what I want, what I don't want. This is where I get into the struggle, into the argument. So we're really wanting to understand what is our work? What are we doing? What are we doing here? What is this meditation actually about? We're not trying to get into some sublime experience. We're not trying to have good experiences. Because I think that's one of the confusions. When we come to meditate and we're not having such a good experience, and then we think something is wrong. I'm doing something wrong, or the teacher's doing something wrong, or the practice is wrong. You know, we're looking for something to blame, something to make wrong. But maybe nothing's wrong. Maybe it's just life. life is difficult, right? Life is, it's not so easy to be in a human body, to have a human mind, right? This is the first teaching of the Buddha, the very first teaching of the Buddha, that there is this pain in this life. There is pain in this life. So much of our practice is coming into a kind of acceptance. Sometimes it's called radical acceptance. A radical acceptance. Because we are asked to accept things that are very, very difficult. We learn to accept things that are very challenging when we lose people that we love, we lose things that we love, we can't get what we want, we can't make life the way we want it to be. Right? It has its own nature. Things have their own way. And so that's why we call this a practice of letting go. We call it a practice of letting go, but we can only let go when we really understand how we're holding on. How am I holding on? What am I attached to? What am I saying? I want it to be like this. I don't want it to be the way it is. We argue with reality. We struggle with reality. We don't accept the way things are. So this is a very radical practice because we're not looking for good experiences. And yet we want that. We want good experiences because we think that's where we're going to find our happiness. But it's not where our happiness lies. Our happiness lies in letting go and accepting the way things are. This is what we want to get some understanding of. I was speaking yesterday about the equanimity, this word equanimity, which really is another way to talk about it. It's where we're not reacting. We're not in a reactive state where we're trying to control and make things happen the way I want them to happen. We let go. This is the equanimity, a balance, a serenity of mind. This is what we're practicing. And when that happens, it feels good. That feels good. I think that's what we really want. We want that good feeling that comes when we stop struggling, when we stop arguing, when we stop trying to make life match our fantasy. It's all fantasy. Right. Sometimes it works, but not all the time. I think we get into trouble because lots of times it works. We can actually get what we want. And then we think, well, it worked that time. Maybe it'll work next time. And then it doesn't work. And then we get very upset. Something's wrong. Why won't it work the way I want it to work? Why can't I have my experience the way I want my experience? Why can't my body be the way I want my body to be? I have things to do, right? There's a woman that I'm working with in Canada, where my other community is in Canada, and she has a very, very bad, I'm not even sure what it is, but she has some problem with her brain, and there's a lot of pressure, a lot of internal pressure in her brain. And the doctors are trying to work with her. But to look at her, she looks like nothing's wrong, and she can function in her life very well. But she's constantly unsure what's going to happen next, whether she's going to have any energy, or whether she's going to start getting very hot. Her whole body gets very hot, or she'll get very cold. She has to put ice packs on her neck. She has to lie down. She never knows if she makes a plan, whether she can meet the plan. I mean, she has no control, no consistency over her day-to-day life. Although a lot of times she can function fine. And to imagine to live like that, where from 1 hour to the next, really from 1 minute to the next, she doesn't know whether she can keep going forward in her life in the same way. She's young. She's only in her maybe young 50s. And she has lots of vision for her life, lots of things she wants to do, lots of things she wants to engage in. But her body won't let her. And the doctors can't really find any way to help her fix her brain, what's happening in there. So it's throwing off all the circuits. Her body isn't functioning like a normal body. It's very, very sad, very painful. And so to talk with her, you know, she talks about all the vision she has for what she wants to see happen in her work. She wants to work with native people, Indian people in Canada, and some of the youth bringing some advantages to the youth, which are, they're very oppressed in Canada. And so she has a wonderful vision, wonderful capacity, but her body won't let her. So her practice, fortunately, she has insight practice. She has vipassana. So she can work with this radical letting go. Just every hour she has to let go. She has to let go. She moves forward, her mind moves her forward, and then her body won't go. Her mind moves forward and her body won't go. So she's constantly in this place of having to accept and not fight, not argue, not struggle. This second arrow, you know, she has to watch her mind and stay in tune with reality, the way things are. This is the way things are. Right? So we do what we can. We work with our experience. We make adjustments. We help ourselves. We take care of ourselves. We make good choices for ourselves. And then nature has its own way. Right? There's something else happening that is beyond our control. Something's happening. And so we open to that. We open to that. Right? So our practice is this practice of direct experience. Right? Direct experience. What's happening in this moment, right now? So that we can begin to understand this mind. And what is this mind telling us? What is this mind saying? What is the this word? This is a word. This word, attitude. This is, how would you talk about attitude? Because I want to speak about attitude. The quality of the mind. Mm-hmm. How would you say it in English? Another way of speaking about attitude. How was that in English?
Disposition of the mind.
Hmm?
Disposition of the mind.
Disposition? Yeah. Disposition of the mind, yeah. Is that? Mm-hmm. Good. People, this is because we're looking today at this attitude. Mm-hmm. Does everybody hear the get this, what this this disposition of the mind? Yeah, everybody got it? Because this is our practice today. It's the practice of attitude. Yeah, so it's the disposition of the mind, or the quality of the mind. Where is the mind? How is the mind? Right? So the practice that I want us to have today is practicing with three questions. Three questions. The first question is, am I aware? Not too difficult, right? Am I aware? Not just every now and then, just ask this question. Am I aware? Where am I? Am I here? Because awareness, this Joseph Goldstein, one of my teachers, speaks about it as a binary system. It's just two. It has an on and an off. You're either on or you're off. Right? Awareness is on or awareness is off. It's not, no in between. There's no in between. You're either here or you're not here, right? So every now and then, just ask, am I aware? Where am I, right? It's a wonderful practice, right? So because unless we're here, nothing else can happen. We can't do our investigation. We can't look more deeply. We can't connect with life. So first we have to find out, where am I? Am I here? Am I aware? Right? This is the first question. And then if we find that we're not here very much, if we're really lost more and more in the imaginary world of our mind, then we make a stronger intention, we make a commitment, we have an aim for awareness. We say, I'm going to be more aware, right? I'm going to be, you know, it's a strong commitment to awareness. So we make that the most important thing, right? So that's the first question. The second question is, what am I aware of? So here you are, you're aware, but awareness isn't abstract. Awareness isn't vague. There's something that we are meeting, something we're engaged with in that awareness. What is it? Is it the thinking mind? Is it the feelings? Is it the emotions? Is it the sights, the sounds, the smells, the skin, the body? What is happening? What is happening? So the first question is, am I aware? The second question is, what? What is happening? Not why. We're not interested in any why is it happening. We're only interested in what is happening. Right? What is it? What kind of experience is here? Right? This is the second question. And we become interested. So the attitude or the disposition of mind is curious, interested. I want to know what's happening. It becomes more like a child. We have a childlike curiosity. I want to know my experience. I want to know about this human life, this mysterious life that I find myself in, this body, this mind. I want to know. So we wake up the curiosity and the interest. This is a quality of the awake mind, of the Buddha mind. The Buddha mind is interested, curious, wants to know. And the third question is the one I really want us to look at today as well, is this attitude, right? So the attitude is what I was speaking about with the story. Is there a wanting, a clinging, an attaching, a holding, a controlling in the mind? I want my experience to be like this. I don't want my experience to be like this, where we get into the contraction and the irritation and the grasping and the attachment. It's all tight. It's a tight. And when mind is tight, the body is tight. Or another attitude in the mind can be, we're not even really paying attention. We're just kind of dull, sleepy, tired, bored, not even interested at all. That's an attitude. That's a quality of the mind, right? So those are the three. We go into the wanting, the not wanting, or the dullness. Those are the three ways that the mind moves. Right? Or when those patterns aren't there, there can be this open, allowing, welcoming, receptive, curious, interested, inviting, right? An attitude. What is the quality of the mind? So when the mind isn't in constriction or asleep, we are open, right? We're open. Open to the way things are. So this is our pathway. This is the pathway now, today, so that we can understand a little bit more about this insight practice. Right? What are we doing here? This is the path, right? We talk about the Buddha's path. This is the Buddha's path. So we're now entering a little bit more firmly on the path. So, I talked for a long time, so we have just maybe a short time for some practice. But you'll have the rest of the day, so. So let's just maybe take 10 minutes. So we have a chance to look at our own mind. So we first begin to settle into the body. We use our body as an anchor, as a support for our meditation. As we come into stillness, as the body is still, we can see more clearly the movement of the mind. Now checking to see what is the quality of your mind, what is the attitude of your mind right now, without judgment, without expectation, but with a kind and interested awareness. Mm-hmm. Is there attachment in the mind, wanting experience to be different than it is right now? Or is there an open, allowing, welcoming of just what's here? Simply knowing. And opening your awareness to the rest of your experience. It's feeling and sensing. Allowing the best that you can. Whatever's occurring. No need to even make much meaning. Just simply direct knowing of sensations, feelings, sounds, thoughts and images, thoughts and images coming and going. Letting it all flow through. Not holding on to anything. Letting go of judgments. Letting go of expectation. checking every now and then. Am I aware? Are you here? And with the awareness, asking, what am I aware of? What's happening? And how is the attitude in the mind towards what's happening? Is there wanting something to be different? Is there a falling asleep? Or is there open, accepting, allowing? Welcoming. Noticing this without any judgment. You simply want to know. So, just want to check to see if there's any questions or anything that you might want a little bit more clarity about before we go.
One question. What is happening in the mind of the enlightened one? In this two arrow expression.
In the two arrows?
Yes, you say. The second arrow. But the enlightened one.
Yeah.
What's happening in his mind?
Yeah. What do you think?
Acceptation.
Huh?
Acceptation for the body and for the things he's happening.
Did you say occupation?
Acceptance.
Acceptance. So the mind would be filled with acceptance. So the absence of reactivity, right? So you can think about it as absence. There's no anger, there's no aversion, there's no grasping, there's no dullness, right? So what's that quality when those are absent, right? So I'm not sure we can put a word on that. We try to put words on that. But I think it's helpful to think about it as absent. Right? No greed, no hate, no confusion. Right? Yeah. So That's often how the teachings are spoken about, is the absence of. Right? And then we see what remains, which is your question, right? What remains? Right? So one of the qualities is acceptance, right? Open, spacious, but also full of the experience, right? So full of the sensation, full of the seeing, full of the hearing, full of the feeling, full. It's full, not empty. Because there's nothing in the way, so we're full of what's happening. Mindful. Right? Because it's open space, can fill up. There's nothing in the way. Right? So it's just full with the moment. Sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, feel, sensation. Yeah. Because it's open. Yeah, good question. Thank you.
So would that be the same as being serene?
Serene? Yeah. Yeah, I think so, because for me, understanding serenity is the absence, again, the absence of reactivity, right? Isn't that, that's serenity. So when the mind is absent of the holding, of the grasping, of the anger, of the wanting, and yet awake, not asleep. Not a sleepy serenity, because that can also feel serene. But we're talking about bright, bright, light. Yeah. Yeah. You get a feel for it, you know, you get a feel for it, but it's mostly, the pathway for me is through the absence. When it's not, when there's not, the when the mind is relaxed, but awake, get a feel for that. Relaxed and awake. And then it can fill with everything, fill up with everything. Okay, good. Okay. Today we have two group meetings. There's going to be a group that's going to start after this. You can just make your way up to my cottage, the people who are in group two, and we'll have some time to check in one-to-one. And I didn't say, but the groups, I want people to come to the groups. It's not optional. It's mandatory. Part of the agreement. Part of the agreement for being on the retreat. Because that way I can get a sense of how your practice is going and, you know, check in with you. Then there's another group at 2:30. So that's group three, so please remember to come. And I will need somebody to lead this next sitting at 10:45. So somebody who could sit here and ring the bell and guide, you won't say anything, you just sit and ring the bell. Okay, Chris will do that. And then I think that's all we need this morning. Okay, so we have our time for our some walking now, and sitting, and in the walking it's the same practice, exactly the same practice. The only difference is we're moving rather than sitting. So we're still, am I aware? What am I aware of? How am I being aware? What's the quality of the mind? Same thing when we're doing our walking meditation. Okay. And as much as we can, really bringing a continuity, moment after moment after moment after moment, all through the day. Yeah. From the minute we wake up in the morning till we put our head on the pillow at night, we have opportunity for mindfulness, for mindful awareness, moment to moment to moment, for this wonderful practice of insight and investigation. Thank you. Did you have a question?
Yes, that was just a thought really, that in this attitude, radical acceptance, an attitude whether loving kindness towards oneself is an important element in that, to be able to embrace what comes and what one sees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the comment was that in this attitude, yes, this attitude that we're talking about is the loving kindness, the attitude of loving kindness, really. Mm-hmm. It's another aspect of the attitude of loving acceptance, loving kindness, that we're also bringing to the situation and the embracing of oneself, accepting and embracing oneself in that. So that would be another important element to name, the loving, kind attitude of mind that comes with the open, allowing, welcoming, yeah. So, and we can practice loving kindness, you know, very, like we did last night. It actually becomes another practice where we cultivate that attitude, that particular attitude of mind. Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Have a very good day of practice. Thank you.